You're listening to The Impromptu on the Hologram Radio Network, a multifaceted show discussing how technology, art, design, and equality converge on topics that matter most to us. From gaming culture to film and other forms of media, we examine the creative process and how the decisions we make shape our perceptions and lives. This is Alex Knight, and I am joined by Michael Norton. Episode 89, Nintendo's Chimera Chat Solution. Today on the podcast, a jam-packed episode. Nintendo's new online chat solution for the Switch turns out to be a complicated and messy solution. Apple Siri speaker predictions, a new premium Android phone from Andy Rubin, iPhone 8 rumors, a slew of new Android vulnerabilities, and our WWDC 2017 hopes. That's coming up next on The Impromptu.
Well, we are but days away from WWDC, and we are now going to talk for 45 minutes about Apple. No, just kidding. We are saving all that for next week when we talk about everything they've announced. Might even run into two parts. For now, Nintendo. So, yesterday there was a very interesting, I wouldn't call it an announcement. They just kind of updated their website and then tweeted a link to the website, and then Kotaku had to email them for further comment. But the TLDR of the situation is, it's a good news, bad news sort of thing. We'll start with the bad news. Bad news, the Nintendo Switch Online service will not fully launch until 2018. But the good news is, it will cost approximately $20 a year. Not a month, a year. And instead of the service that they initially announced, where people subscribed to the online service would get one game a month that they could only play for that month, which everyone essentially screamed about as a terrible idea, instead of that, they are doing something much better, which is they are letting people gain access to a library of classic games that they can play indefinitely as long as they have a subscription to the online service. And these games have been upgraded with online play. Initially, there will be NES games available, but they're not ruling out the possibility of SNES or other titles. So essentially, their most classic virtual console titles will now be a Netflix-like service that is part of the online subscription. So not only are you getting online multiplayer, but you're now also getting this back catalog of Nintendo titles that are free for you to play forever as long as you continue paying the subscription. And again, this is $20 a year, which, depending on how many games become part of that service, is an insane deal. So that's some really good news from Nintendo. But then we got some not so great news in the form of how the voice chat in multiplayer on the Switch is apparently going to work. So noted Japanese third-party accessory maker Hori announced an officially branded Splatoon 2 headset for the Switch that will launch with Splatoon 2 in July. And the way it works is less than ideal. So it's squid themed, of course, because Splatoon. And it has a squid headphone splitter. And one of the headphone jacks goes into your phone. And one of the headphone jacks goes into the Switch. Because as of now, the only way to chat with friends will be through the smartphone app. And the only way to listen to the game is by plugging into the headphone jack on the Switch. So in order to have the experience that PS4 and Xbox One have, where you can plug a headset directly into the controller and hear everything, you have to create this bizarre chimera of a connection where you've got your phone next to your Switch and they're both plugged into your headset. So you've got two devices running at the same time to add the functionality that would normally be in a single controller on any other console.
It seems so strange to me. I mean, when I was reading this article, the Switch is such a success and they put so much thought into it, and to now have this kind of weird, not really well thought out solution, it just seems like a step back, doesn't it?
It does and it doesn't. I mean, playing devil's advocate, Nintendo is a very family-oriented company, and they likely want to avoid the kinds of issues that happen on other platforms with voice chat. They don't want kids, for example, to run into a public chat on a game and hear swearing and stuff all the time. So I think what they're trying to do is basically say, we have voice chat, but you can only do it as party chat. So you can only do voice chat with friends, which is not necessarily ideal for every game. I mean, Splatoon 2 is like, what, 6v6? You don't necessarily have six friends all the time. So, I mean, if you're going into a lobby with a bunch of other random players, voice chat is nice occasionally. I mean, for the most part, a lot of the trash talking, that is usually on things like Call of Duty. As far as I know, the Splatoon community is a little nicer, I hope. But because Nintendo has to kind of maintain this image of family friendliness, I think they're just deliberately tying their hands in this instance. Which, I mean, it's not necessarily wrong, but I do think they should offer older players the option to have chat the way they want it. And, I mean, the Switch is capable of this. The headphone jack in the Switch easily supports a microphone. And the Switch has Bluetooth 4, so a wireless headset would be trivial. It doesn't have support for headsets, but they could add it. It'd be really easy. So hopefully they reverse their decision or at least make this less painful for people, because having to plug a headset into your phone and the Switch at the same time is just untenable. Like,
oh, it's clunky.
What if you're playing in docked mode? You're gonna like pull out your phone, set up the party chat, plug it into your headset, set the phone down next to the Switch, plug it into the Switch, and then hope that the headset cord is long enough? Like, I don't think they've really thought this through 100%. Like, a lot of people are not going to be that close to the dock sitting on their couch. Like, if people have large TVs, chances are the entertainment center is far away from where they're sitting, to the point where most headset cables wouldn't be able to reach. So unless you're willing to buy a brand new headset that has a 3 meter long cable, it makes it really difficult. And then on the other hand, it's like, oh, well, you just keep your phone with you and plug it into your phone, but then you can't hear the game.
Mm-hmm.
So then at that point, it's like, well, do I get a mono headset and only hear chat through one ear and then hear the game through the other ear coming off of the TV? Like, there's just too many compromises and limitations to this. And I'm hoping that Nintendo addresses some of it at E3 in 2 weeks.
Yeah, I mean, maybe this is just a stepping stone to the next version or next iteration of it, where they'll make a bunch of improvements. Maybe they just wanted to get something out there rather than wait another year and not, you know, make people wait longer without a solution, right?
It's possible. So, I mean, we'll have to see where they go with this, ultimately. Hopefully, we're not disappointed in 2 weeks. Hopefully, they say, okay, this is the way it is for now. We're working on adding wireless headset support. We're working on adding functionality to hear the game through the phone or something like that. Like, the app is supposed to connect to the Switch. So I don't see why they wouldn't be able to add an incoming audio stream from the game. I mean, it might not be 100% ideal due to the latency and the throughput, but if they can somehow get that working over Wi-Fi, I would assume it's not Bluetooth. I would assume it's Wi-Fi, hopefully. If it is Wi-Fi, then the phone could easily accommodate an audio stream coming from the Switch, in which case it should be possible to hear the chat and the game at the same time from just the phone. So, I mean, maybe that's the part we're missing. Maybe you don't necessarily have to plug anything into the Switch to hear the game. And if that's the case, it's just fine the way it is. But if that's not the case, then obviously it creates a lot of complications. So we'll just have to wait and see what they announce.
And when is E3? Is that September?
No, it is in 2 weeks. So this week is WWDC, and then next week on the 13th is the first day of E3. Of course,
I'll have to watch it because I haven't. It's been years since I've seen an E3.
Yeah. And then the weekend before that, there's the keynotes, obviously. So Microsoft, Sony, they both have their keynotes. Nintendo, as with last year, isn't doing a keynote. They're doing a Nintendo Direct that'll air stream live just before the show floor opens, I think. And they're mainly going to be focusing on Super Mario, which comes out at the end of the year, Super Mario Odyssey. Just like last year, they focused on Zelda Breath of the Wild, though there will be other announcements as well.
Yeah, I'm just anxiously awaiting to see what Sony announces, because are they going to have any kind of update for the PlayStation? Is there going to be a new Vita?
I think there will not be a PS5 at E3. I think that'll be next year. For now, they're probably going to talk about the PS4 Pro,
right. And...
They might announce some new hardware for PlayStation VR or a price cut for PlayStation VR.
I'm just hoping they silently slip in a UHD Blu-ray player in that thing.
Yeah, that'd be nice. That's the dream. So other than that, I mean, this year I think will mostly be about the games for Sony, like new exclusives, new IP. They'll probably have more to say about the upcoming God of War sequel, where Kratos is in Viking land somehow.
You know, and we're talking about Nintendo and its chat system and stuff like that. On the note of voice chat, I saw a very interesting piece on Mac Observer about the quote-unquote Siri speaker, that it's actually going to be more like a Sonos, or at least that's the idea. And it does actually, when I read it, it makes total sense that they would do something with built-in speakers like that and make it more than just this basic sort of Amazon Echo competitive thing. It's got to be more than that.
I know I said we wouldn't talk about Apple. I lied. Yeah, the Siri speaker, I don't think it was ever going to be an Echo clone. I don't think it was ever going to be this little stationary thing that just sits there and it's just for Siri and that's it. Like, Apple's not that kind of company. They don't make something that just does one thing and that's it. It's all about creating that ecosystem. It's all about creating a device that works with every other device. And just having a standalone speaker doesn't really fit into that big picture. So by creating something that's more like an iPod Hi-Fi or a Beats Pill, you're creating a wireless music system that has advanced Siri functionality. supports AirPlay and can act as a HomeKit hub. And then you have a product that's very interesting, because then with this one device, it's essentially the heart of your home. Not only does it act as a hub for all of your smart devices, your light switches, your light bulbs, your temperature sensors, offloading that from the Apple TV and optionally the iPad. I still don't know why they let you turn an iPad into a hub. It's weird. But this device could essentially act as the new hub, and you just put one in your home and it allows you to connect to all of your devices. It could act as an external sound bar for your Apple TV, possibly. And then on top of that, Siri. And this won't be the Siri that everyone is used to making fun of. Oh no, this will be the Siri that's in iOS 11. Possibly powered by the Apple Neural Engine, as we discussed last week. I don't know if that chip is ready or not. If it's not, then it won't be in there. If it is, it'll be the first product that has it. And it'll, whether it has it or not, it'll still be a good segue for Apple to announce their new machine learning stuff. It'll probably make less sense for them to announce Neural Kit or whatever they end up calling that machine learning SDK. Right. But it would be a good segue to announce an upgraded Siri kit and basically have something like the way Alexa works, where you can add skills and then the Siri speaker becomes more and more capable
over time. I think they have to do something, and I think they will do something at the announcement for that, because, and I've been paying attention to some other tech podcasts have said the exact same thing. Like, you know, there's been this sort of long period of silence, and there has to be something, some update with Siri Kit, something major this year.
Yeah.
And if not, then it's a sign, a troubling sign that there's some kind of issue at Apple.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And I mean, we've gone over this. There's this push and pull at Apple with privacy versus having features that compete. And hopefully they've solved those issues. Like I said last week, the Neural Engine would go a long way to solving those problems, because if it's on the device, then they don't need to worry about privacy. But obviously, that chip is not in all devices yet. So in the meantime, they have to do something else, anything else. So it'll be interesting to see exactly what they have for us on Monday in that regard. Hopefully it's not nothing.
And the Monday keynote is 10 o'clock?
Yes.
And where are they doing the keynote this year?
This year it's in San Jose. They have moved from Moscone in San Francisco. It's actually a lot closer to Cupertino. So the Apple developers have a lot more time to be there and discuss things with developers. It's a lot easier on them instead of having to commute into San Francisco.
What about the size of the venue, though?
Oh, it's the same size venue. Okay. I think it's maybe a little bigger.
So it's not like they were downsizing to save a couple of bucks on the event.
No. They just wanted to move it closer to headquarters, which makes sense. That way, the developer schedules aren't as adversely affected, because they can just kind of commute. I think it's like 30 or 40 minutes from Cupertino, something like that, whereas San Francisco is like 1.5 or 2 hours away. So, like, it takes time out of the day to go down there.
No, it makes perfect sense to have it closer, for sure.
Yeah, like, it's not just, like, wherever in San Francisco. It's, like, right downtown San Francisco. So you're dealing with traffic at that point and just trying to get into the city, and then you have to get out. So, yeah, it's just a lot more efficient logistically to have it in San Jose. And it's cheaper. Like, hotel rates in San Jose are a fraction of what they are in San Francisco. So not only is it more efficient for Apple, but it's cheaper for people attending as well. So all in all, it's kind of a win-win. A lot of people complained about the move, but ultimately, I think it's a good thing.
Yeah, and it's probably a good change of pace, good change of scenery anyways for the people attending, right? Because a lot of people go out for drinks and they, you know, there's other stuff to do.
Yeah, that brings us to our final topic, Speaking of,
we're not done.
No.
That wasn't it.
No,
okay.
That wasn't it. So speaking of tech and phones and hardware and so on, there was an interesting announcement this week from Andy Rubin, the co-creator of Android, who now runs a venture capital company, and he started a new company called Essential. And they just announced their new Android phone called the Essential Phone, or just phone, I don't know. And the way the phone looks should surprise nobody. It is a 5.6-inch phone that is roughly the size of an iPhone 7. The display takes up the entire front of the phone, except for a chin at the bottom and a cutout at the top for the camera. Sound familiar? I will say this, though. It doesn't look as pretty as the renders of the iPhone 8. The cutout for the camera is just kind of awkward, and the chin at the bottom is also really awkward. Like, the phone just looks really asymmetrical and odd. But of course, you can't deny the screen. Like, it just takes up the entire front for the most part. And that's certainly something to behold. It's not OLED, surprisingly. It's a regular LED panel, using the latest in custom shape panel technology. Because obviously you have the cutout at the top. Yeah,
I'm looking at pictures of it now. It looks interesting.
Yeah.
I mean, it's not a bad looking phone.
It's not a bad looking phone.
It's certainly better looking than some Android phones that I've seen. Even better than Samsung, for sure.
Yeah. Well, I don't know about that. I think, in my opinion, the S8 is actually better in some ways. Like, we've talked about how
I haven't looked at it closely, but
we've talked about how the S8 isn't ideal. Fingerprint sensor, some of the other details. But where it lacks in all that, it makes up for with the rounded, easy to hold design. The Essential Phone is essentially a block,
right?
So,
but the camera lens, it looks like, judging from the photo, it looks like it's actually flush with the back of the case. It doesn't stick out at all, so that's kind of nice.
Yeah, that's correct. The phone itself is thicker, I think. But yeah, like it's a candy bar phone. Like it's a rectangle. It's solid. It's flat. There's no curve to it, so it's going to be a lot less comfortable to hold compared to a rounded phone like the S8 or the iPhone 8. One of the key selling points for this phone is it's made out of ceramic and titanium, two materials that will never ever scale to 50 million units. Because there's literally not enough titanium in the world. So this is a niche phone. They will not sell iPhone numbers. I mean, they probably weren't going to anyways, but with those materials, they're certainly not going to. You just can't scale titanium to those numbers. There's not enough of it. And ceramic is too expensive to scale to those numbers. Honestly, I'm not even sure how they're selling it for $699 in the States. That's how much it costs. Like,
so there's not going to be a contract for this. It'll just be $699.
Yeah.
Outright.
Yeah, it's an unlocked phone. Like, I'm honestly not sure how they're getting away with selling it for that. Because you've got the ceramic, you've got the titanium. The front is Gorilla Glass 5. It's got 4 gigs of RAM, a 128 gig flash drive internally. Like, this is not cheap hardware, and somehow they're selling it for $699. Like, their profit margin must be quite small compared to their competitors.
It most likely is. It's an interesting strategy, though, because maybe they want to try to push the industry. Not that it necessarily would happen, but maybe they want to say, look, phones don't have to be cheap quality. And you can have a premium phone that isn't insanely expensive, and maybe they they rather go that way. Maybe they want to maybe their strategy is to just make up for that in sheer volume, that the more people that buy the product, the more money they make. So, I mean, that's one strategy. I don't know if that's...
Yeah, it's possible. I don't know. It's hard to say what they're trying to do. I think maybe they're hoping to build some kind of market share, or yeah, set an example for what an Android phone can be. The other thing they announced was the Essential Home, which runs Ambient OS, which is a different operating system. It's not Android. And that is essentially their version of the Echo. And it's got a little rounded screen on it. And they're hoping to build some kind of ecosystem around that. They also announced a 360-degree camera that magnetically attaches to the back of the Essential phone. There's actually two little pinholes on the back that are for accessories. It's both power and data, I believe. So anything that magnetically clips into those holes, it's kind of like the smart connector on the iPad Pro. So it's this little camera thing, and it just snaps on, and it just works. And he showed off the camera app that works with it rather awkwardly. He basically showed the camera app with the 360 camera add-on. And he was just like awkwardly scrolling, and showing how it literally saw everything around it. So like you had the standard camera view and he was just swiping and the view kept turning and turning and turning until it faced him.
Yeah, I'll have to watch the video, but that does sound weird.
Like, it was a very awkward demo. And really, the entire interview was really awkward. Yeah, it's a pretty phone. Honestly, I don't know how well it's going to do. And they're certainly not going to make 50 million of them. Because that would be impossible unless they...
Well, they're not going to sell 50 million.
No.
I mean, that's just not going
to
happen.
Yeah, they're not going to sell 50 million and it's impossible for them to make 50 million in the first place because of the titanium. You know, unless they pull an asteroid down from space that's full of titanium. Of course, then you'd collapse the world economy because you'd have like however many metric tons of titanium. And yeah, that's that. It's a nice Android phone, obviously. Good price. You can only buy it in the States. That's the other negative point.
Yeah, well, that's kind of useless. Well, not useless, but it sucks for Canadians and other people in the world that want a phone.
Not going to work for us, that's for sure. It's not an essential if you can't buy it. Speaking of Android, though, recently it's come to the attention, well, of anyone in the tech community or security community, there's actually a major vulnerability in Android right now called Cloak and Dagger. And it affects every single version of Android, including the latest one, 7.1.2. And there is no easy fix in sight. In fact, for some aspects of this vulnerability, Google has closed the tickets with won't fix. Essentially, the way these vulnerabilities work is they exploit two things, the system alert window and accessibility service. So the core component in Android that lets it work for people with disabilities, and the modals that pop up when there's an alert on the system. So like prompting you for a software update, that kind of thing. Essentially, if they build an app a certain way and you open that app, you install the app and open it, they can basically trick the system into generating a fake system alert that is invisible. And if you tap anywhere on the screen, it will capture that click and essentially elevate the privilege of the app. Like, it can be asking you for like root access and all kinds of stuff, and you would never even know. You're just using the app as normal, tapping things. And all the while, there are these hidden modals that don't show up that you're actually tapping, giving privileges to the app. And then it can do whatever it wants. It can track everything you're doing. It can turn the camera on.
Yeah, that's nasty. I heard about this earlier this week in depth, and it seems like Google has just painted themselves into a corner because of the way Android is architected. And like you're saying, I mean, there are big, well-known apps, like even Facebook, they don't ask for certain permissions, and it can be so easily exploited because of this. The user doesn't know what's going on behind the scenes.
Well, yeah, because it's invisible. Like, you can be tapping stuff and not even realize that you're giving away privileges to the app, and then it's doing stuff in the background without your knowledge. Like, there is no visible sign that this vulnerability is being exploited. Like, you could install one of those latest, like, those apps that are kind of the rage right now, like a camera app that does some kind of crazy filter to your face, like that face app one that shows you what you would look like if you were a woman or old or younger. Somebody could make a clone of that for Android, use this vulnerability, people install it, they're like playing around with it, taking photos, and before they know it, their entire phone is at the mercy of whoever built this app.
It strikes me that Google's not going to do anything about this until like the very last minute where something catastrophic happens and they have to. But I mean, I don't even know where they're going to start with this.
Well, yeah, like this vulnerability is systemic. Like, these are core APIs. To change them would break functionality, break apps. There's a lot of stuff that relies on this underpinning. Like the accessibility service, for example, that could break usage of Android devices for anyone with a disability, which is a big problem. So, I mean, any solution is going to have to be developed very carefully, tested, and they're really going to have to think about this, which is a huge problem because this is something that's going to affect every version of Android. And then on top of that, you've got all of the fragmentation issues. So even if Android gets a fix in, say, Android 8 or Android 7.2 or something like that, there are going to be a ton of devices where this vulnerability is still a problem. So I guess they can fix it on the OS side, but then they're going to have to do some due diligence on the Play Store and look out for this vulnerability in the wild.
But if they fix this, though, wouldn't this break a lot of apps?
It depends how they fix it. Like, they could fix it in such a way that nobody has to do anything, but that's going to take time. So in the meantime, they're just going to have to really keep an eye out and really tune their detection algorithms on the Play Store, because a lot of the Play Store review that happens, that's not people. Like the iOS App Store, that's people. That's why the reviews take so long. Android, totally different story. You can put an app up there and it gets scanned by their, I guess it's machine learning now, whatever trained AI they have to kind of scan the code and make sure that there's nothing overtly wrong with it, that kind of thing. And maybe depending on what it finds, it could escalate to an actual person. But the first line of defense for the Android store is AI. So yeah, Google is going to have to be very careful with this and keep an eye out. And if it's found that an app is using this exploit, because the exploit is in the wild now, the people that found it, they contacted Google, they did their due diligence. Google basically said they weren't going to fix it. So then these guys published it.
Yeah, this is publicly. This is the thing that's so frustrating, is that a year went by.
Yeah,
they opened tickets and redid it. They followed up with Google numerous times, gave them so many opportunities, and Google just said nope.
Yeah.
So they said, okay, it's been a year. This is going to go public now.
Yeah. So, yeah, it's not a great situation. Obviously, it remains to be seen if this vulnerability can be exploited in the way that they've demonstrated. Because it's one thing to have an app running on your phone that does it. It's another thing to successfully publish to the Play Store. and infect millions of devices. So we'll have to wait and see exactly what happens. But now that it's out there, the likelihood that somebody will try increases every day. So it's only a matter of time before somebody tries to use it and tries to test the Play Store. And I hope at that point the Play Store is ready and it detects this exploit before it gets shipped to the public. And in the meantime, I really do hope Google's working on a fix for it that's more permanent.
Yeah,
despite
I hope
all the
so too.
Won't fix.
Yeah, we'll see. We'll see. So for Monday's keynote, we will be covering that next week.
Yes.
So episode 90 is going to be our WWDC 2017 episode. So stay tuned for that.
Yep. Might even try and get a special guest on. We'll see.
You've been listening to the Impromptu One Hologram Radio. I'm Alex Knight, joined by Michael Norton, as always. If you'd like to show your support for this podcast and the work that we do here, the single best way to do that is to go to patreon.com/hologramradio and donate today. Subscribe to the podcast on iTunes to ensure you get every new episode each and every week. And do leave us a review if you have a moment that makes us feel good, as well as helps other people find the podcast. We're also available in Google Play Music, TuneIn, and Stitcher as well if you'd like to stream it there, and wherever else you can find podcasts. You can follow us on Twitter. We're at The Impromptu. Michael Norton is at Zen Impulse. I'm at Zero Distraction. And if you'd like to send us feedback the old-fashioned way, you can email us at theimpromptu@hologramradio.org, and that will go to both myself and Michael.
And on that note, thanks for listening, everyone. See you next time.